is Matt.
And with us is...
Ashley Niemer.
Hi, Ashley. Welcome to the show. Hi, glad to have you on.
Thank you, guys.
And we are going to be talking to Ashley. She's going to join us for the whole show today. We're going to be talking to her later about her new book that's coming out and some other books she's done. But she wanted to podcast with us the whole show, so we're going to let you get to know her as we are going to be talking Blade today. That's our featured movie and some other stuff. And then we're going to talk to her about things that she has coming out. And so how are you doing, Ashley?
I'm well. I watched Blade this morning, so it's fresh in my head.
Awesome.
And how's y'all's week's been, Matt and Ashley?
A little rainy.
A little rainy.
Yeah, about that. Sums it up.
Yeah, same here. Rainy and football practice with the sun and football game yesterday and the heat. It was very, very hot yesterday.
Yes.
And
well, the rain should help that.
I hope so. And then it makes for muddy uniforms if they practice in the mud, so it could be worse. And so usually we start the show with a little chit-chat like that, and we usually have a segment called Download This where we talk about what we streamed or watched lately. Anything new on the horizon that y'all have streamed or downloaded or watched in the last week or two? Ashley, you can go first.
We started The Ozarks in season 2.
I've heard good things about that show.
I'm not familiar.
I can't remember season 1. Apparently, I watched the whole thing, but I'm enjoying season 2. It's with Jason Bateman, and he's a money launderer, and it's pretty good. It's pretty decent, at least, you know, what I remember season 1, but I'm enjoying season 2.
That's kind of how I was with, like, I fell behind on Game of Thrones, and I would go and watch it, and I'd like, what happened last season? I don't remember, because they would drag on so long, and it takes a year for me.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, wait, what happened now? anything else that you've watched lately, or...
I mean, that's new. No, I watch a lot of old shows, too, to take up my time.
That's okay. I do that, too, sometimes. You watch anything this week, Matt?
Mine is something old. I watched The Death of Superman, the DC animated DVD.
Well, it's new, but old because it leaked out, like, 3 months ago.
Yeah, and it was just awesome. I mean, I like the new take of it. It's better than the 2005 release. And I'm looking forward to Reign of Superman.
Yeah, that was a cool animated movie. I'm going to be the slacker here on Download this week because I really haven't watched anything this week with things being so busy. I watch the Astros every night. That's about it. So, usually I have watched something every week, but this week I just did not sit down and watch anything extra this week, which is rare for me because I'm a...
Well, go Astros because they blew out
I'm
the
a
Twins.
Movie guy and a TV guy.
Oh, that's great.
So there's just, I'm a slacker this week in some ways, but, you know.
It's all good.
I feel like I probably watched something on Labor Day when I got home from work, but, because I did labor on Labor Day, but I don't remember. So,
that's a bummer.
That was almost a week ago. You know, it's hard to remember.
What True Lies was playing.
Sometimes.
Maybe you watched True Lies and you don't remember.
It's possible. My download this was lame. I'm sorry. So let's go ahead and get into our featured movie this week because we want to talk some Blade and we want to have time to talk with Ashley and about her big project she's got coming out, which if I remember right, is coming out September 18th. So
that's correct.
So we want to give you your due time and credit to talk about that because I know you're excited about your new book. But we like to feature a movie every episode as we do on the Rebel Radio podcast. And so let's talk Blade. They didn't call it Blade the Vampire Hunter. That's not the official name.
Right.
But it should be.
It should be. But Blade, you know, it's changed so different, many formats here and there. I mean, first he was a British man, and then now he's a Black American man, and I kind of like where it's gone, but changing up the title, it's expected.
Yeah. and this movie came out in 1998, so it's celebrating 20 years, and it's directed by Stephen Norrington and stars Wesley Snipes and Chris Christopherson. And
yes,
that's a heck of a name to say. And Steven Dorff. And it's pre-Marvel Cinematic Universe era. This is before comic book. It's even pre-X-Men and Spider-Man before comic book movies started getting the norm in theaters.
And in fact, we were coming off of some bad comic book movies with Batman and Robin. And was Daredevil around that time?
No, Daredevil was like 2002, 2003
That's
or
right.
so.
But I remember that comic movies weren't...
They weren't taken seriously.
Time. Yeah.
There was some underground stuff like The Crow had come out and things like that that were based on graphic novels, but nothing serious because other than the Batman films that were out. You know, and even those, like you said, got campy with Batman Forever and Batman Robin, and they were starting to become a joke. Marvel was going through the beginnings of their bankruptcy at this point, in which they were starting to lose money and eventually sell to Disney, you know, 10 years later. It was a gamble for New Line Cinema to take this character and turn it into a movie. And Wesley Snipes was a huge star in the 90s, so he was a bankable actor back then. I guess he's still bankable now if you're the IRS.
Yeah, I know. Right? Hasn't been here to pay his taxes, unfortunately.
I remember seeing this in theaters. I remember watching it. I was out of high school then, and I remember watching this in theaters, and that was my first experience. When was the first time you guys watched Blade?
For me, it wasn't until it came out on DVD. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I watched it maybe like a year after it came out.
I remember watching it. It had to have been like 2006 or 7. It was kind of in the early stages of my relationship with my husband, but I don't remember it, so I would say this morning would be the one that I remember. But I know I'd seen it before today.
Yeah, that's honestly fair enough. I watched it Friday night. I don't remember watching it for a long time, so it did feel like watching it for the first time. I didn't realize how cheesy it is in some parts.
It
I don't remember
it
being
nice.
Cheesy.
It's very cheesy. I wish my husband wouldn't have told me it was a Marvel movie because I had all these expectations going into it.
Right.
And I was very disappointed.
I mean, Wesley Snipes is smirking throughout it. Stephen Dorff really hams it up.
Yeah, he really does.
And I just don't remember it being that back in 98 when I saw it. I thought it was more serious than that.
It would have been a dead ringer for a Marvel movie if they would have kept the Stan Lee cameo in it, but they took it out, unfortunately. But yeah, you would have seen him early in the movie after the bloodbath scene.
Oh, he had a cameo?
Yeah,
but it was pulled.
Yeah, they actually filmed it and they cut it, because I guess this was pre-X-Men Spider-Man days where he was making cameos in every film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did film it, and I don't know why they cut it. I guess at that time, was there a reason given?
I think it was too bloody, around that scene, around the cameo. I forget the actual reason, but there's a couple scenes that were cut because they thought it was too disturbing, and right. I'm just going to assume that maybe they thought it was too disturbing for them.
Maybe so, because this was rated R before Deadpool and Logan were rated R.
Yeah.
It was a big deal to be a rated R comic book film back then. And maybe that could have something to do with it. Marvel strayed away from it a little bit because Marvel Studios didn't exist at that time. The characters were licensed out. And maybe Stan Lee and his agents thought, you know, maybe it's a little bit too much for your image that is for children and the comic book world.
Yeah.
You know, this is the guy who created Spider-Man and Incredible Hulk, and you know, we don't want you in a bloody movie. Maybe that's perhaps what it was.
Yeah, and this was before he created Stripperella, so I guess this is the innocence of Stan Lee.
The innocence?
Yeah.
Overall, though, you know, rewatching this movie 20 years later, I think it holds up pretty well in parts. Any movie that has a sword fight in it always gets me...
Heck yeah.
My excitement, because I like swords, and that fight at the end is really cool. And Wesley Snipes actually is really good in this. He really enjoys the part, and he's made for it.
Yeah, and what's funny is that Blade was originally... The concept was going to be a comedic, kind of jokey vampire hunter, but this take is very stoic, and he's very serious, and I think it works. I think it works better. You know, we don't need two Deadpools. We don't need a vampire Deadpool. So, I like it. Yeah, I really like the stoic Wesley Snipes.
So you just watched it this morning, Ashley, and
yeah.
I know you're a big vampire fan and stuff and all that, and so how do you feel it holds up 20 years later?
Oh, I mean, I'm a little critical because I studied martial arts in the 90s,
right.
Like my whole childhood, and outside of the sword fighting scene, I thought it was kind of a little cheesy on the fighting, that didn't really like grab me, and so I was a little disappointed on that because I've seen a lot better fight scenes, actions, and later, I guess, movies. Like I said, I wish I wouldn't have known it was a Marvel movie going in because I had such high expectations. But, I mean, I did like, you know, that they could be born or it could be turned. I did like that part of it because that's not always, you know, the case in the different folklore. I did like that part. And I liked that there could be a cure for, you know, the bitten.
Right. Yeah.
I thought those were different.
I remember when this came out and that was a big deal. I remember reading that, like true Anne Rice fans and classical vampire people didn't like Blade because it challenged the ideas of what vampires were and how they could be born and cured and all that, and it treated vampirism as a disease instead of a monster.
Yeah, I guess
would be the word for it.
Mythological
monster. A mythological monster. And I remember that was kind of controversial in the vampire world, I guess. Is there a vampire world? I guess there is.
I guess so.
I would think so. Yeah. I think so, but like I challenge it too. So, I mean, that part didn't bother me because my vampires aren't traditional.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I like that part.
And the action scenes are definitely 90s choreographed. That's for sure. And it's like you said, you go watch movies like, I'm a big fan of The Raid and The Raid 2, which is the martial arts films, and you see the choreograph in something like that, which is outstandingly done with these martial artists that make every move so precise. And you go watch something like Blade from the 90s, and it's basically, Wesley, stand here, Steven, stand here, we're going to move you all around, you're going to kick and punch, and it's really overly choreographed.
Yeah, and you can tell they kind of did some of the stuff similarly to the, I forget the white dude's name, from Enter the Dragon, where they change the angle to make his kicks look a little higher.
Oh, yeah.
And they come from certain angles. Like, he throws these hook kicks, Wesley Snipes, and you can tell they do the angle from the ground, like we're watching Power Rangers,
right,
and trying to make it look like they're jumping higher than they are.
And Snipes had some martial arts training, but Stephen Dorff and most of the other actors didn't. You know, so he did the best he could, but yeah.
He did have a karate and hapkido background, I believe.
It was also interesting that he was, the big deal in this movie is that he's a daywalker. He hunts other vampires because he was born into this, and he wants to rid the underground vampire world that is causing corruption. And Stephen Dorff's character, he plays Deacon Frost, and he is the leader, and he wants to bring back an ancient vampire god to basically take over the world.
Yeah.
And so it's a very simple plot in a lot of ways, but it just it challenges ideas of what vampires are, the fact that he was born, the fact he'd be cured, and the simple fact that he could walk during the day, you know, and then the whole idea I think it was funny when I was watching the other night is that Deacon Frost just puts on sunblock to try to block out the sun. Like, there's no way that's going to work. You
know, it's like, it did in the movie.
No, it does in the movie.
SPF 100.
Yeah, and then they use a Matrix-type bullet scene that was a year before the Matrix came out.
Yeah, that was funny.
And that's
I like the fight scenes in The Matrix. I mean, that just threw me in the movie. I couldn't handle it.
Right. And then,
it's too cheesy.
Oh, yeah. And then the CGI in this is really kind of, that's probably the part that doesn't hold up well, because you know, in 1992, you had the Terminator, and Terminator 2 was really good CGI. And then this movie is only 6 years later, and some of it was just like, oh, that's really bad looking. You know, where the guys are blowing up with their faces are getting bubbly, and the fire where the vampires turn to dust, that was okay done.
Isn't the people that did the CGI, these are the same people from, what's the movie, Dungeons and Dragons?
Was it?
Yeah, this was the same people that did Dungeons and Dragons, and they did some other really, Mortal Kombat Annihilation. They did the CGI for those two movies. And if you remember being disappointed by Mortal Kombat Annihilation and the Beast transformation, you know how bad it was. Their track record is.
So, as a vampire fan, Ashley, what are some things that you did like in this movie about the vampires?
Well, I said I liked that you could be born or you could be turned, and the turned ones have a cure. I did like that. And I liked that they didn't seem to have the sex appeal to the humans, where they were drawn to them because they were vampires, like they're, you know, idolized. I like that they were more villains and more brutal, because I think that's what a vampire really is. And so I did like that.
Because vampires over the years have always had a romanticism about them, and they're always portrayed like that from the original.
That bothers me,
From the original Dracula in 1934 to Tom Cruise Interview the Vampire, they always did that. And that's a good point to see them now a little more. And there's been some other movies, I think, since, I can't think of the top of my head, that portray them more as villains. And and sometimes it's tragic characters. Like, have you ever seen Let the Right One In?
I've not.
Yeah, it's a Swedish film about a little young girl who's a vampire, and she befriends a young boy. It's based on a novel, and it's really good. And there's actually an American remake called Let Me In, which might be on Netflix. The American remake's actually really good, too.
It was on Netflix for a while.
Yeah. So there has been a change with vampires over the years to, like, maybe not romanticize them a little bit as more tragic characters, or in this case, villains. And I think it is a good change. Or sparkly and weird, like in Twilight, which was just strange.
Don't let him walk out. He'll sparkle.
But we won't talk about that on the show. That was pretty awful.
I did enjoy it more than Blade, though, unfortunately.
I'll give you that. That's fair. You know, I mean, there's people out there things they like.
I say that, but my 14-year-old daughter, she loved the movie. She's ready to watch the next two. She was like all in it, and her reactions made watching it worthwhile. But she was all in it. She loved it, but she's 14. So. Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. And I think I ended up seeing the first one because my wife had read the book and she was curious about it. And even
I was talking about Blade.
I was still thinking the Twilight thing.
I was talking. She loved Blade. Both my kids watched it. My son walked out, but she was all in. She was ready to watch the next one.
Oh, that's cool. And Blade 2 is actually really good too.
Yeah,
it's directed by Guillermo del Toro, who went on to make The Shape of Water, won the Oscar this year. And that was one of his early films he did. And it's a little bit lower budget for a Del Toro film, but you can definitely tell his touches in it. And it's got a very young Norman Reedus in it, too.
Before he blew up with
Walking Dead and all that. So Blade 2 is definitely worth seeking out. So if she liked it, she'll probably really like Blade 2. Yeah. And Ron Perlman's in Blade 2.
Yeah, Ron
So it's got a really good cast. So, you know, Wesley Snipes, he had been trying to make Black Panther back in the 90s.
Yes.
And he couldn't get anyone to do it. And people were like, oh, no. You know, no one's going to take a black superhero seriously and everything. And it's funny that 19 years later, we got an amazing Black Panther movie. So he went to make this instead. New Line Cinema was like, hey, we have the rights to this. We'll do it. And that's how this came about. And the studio really kind of wanted Denzel Washington or Lawrence Fishburne to play the part.
And LL Cool J, right?
And LL Cool J. But
oh, my God. Yeah. This would have been awful.
But David
that's
more,
awful.
Yeah. I could see Denzel in the 90s, but not
LL Cool J.
Yeah. It's like, I'm going to knock you out, vampires.
Walking up with one pant leg half up, down. Oh, right? My God.
And then it was really, so I could see Denzel playing the part, but not anyone else.
No, you know?
And so he made this instead, and then, which was good. It turned out that way for Wesley because, people talk about Black Panther being the first big black superhero movie, but this came out 20 years earlier. And it is the first, really.
Yeah,
he might be an anti-hero, but he's also a superhero because he is trying to help people that are hurt by these villainous vampires.
Yeah, it looked like he didn't want to take the doctor in, the hematologist in, but his conscience got the best of him, and he took her in. So he kills vampires. He does help those who have hurt, but he also beats up cops.
But weren't they corrupt cops?
Some of the cops were corrupt, and I think at the time he didn't know that yet. You know, when he first approached him. Yeah, and I think that's why he was trying to help him. And then he realized later that the cops were working for the, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, they were corrupt cops. So the cops were in on it. The vampires have all these people working for them, essentially, in this world that's created. And they never really say where the world is. I guess there's an illusion. There's a scene where you can see a sign in the background that tells you what city it might be in. But I actually kind of like sci-fi combat movies like that the world is just exists and it can take place in any city. And it doesn't matter, because Marvel's always known for being New York City or L.A., you know.
I just assume it's New York.
Yeah, every Marvel movie.
There's no way it could be New York. We had that conversation this morning. They drove way too fast.
Yeah.
There's too much congestion in New York. It cannot be New York.
That's right.
That's funny.
So San Francisco's always been a popular movie spot for vampires and stuff, so maybe it was there. We'll just say it was there.
Vampires like San Fran? Yeah,
and they drive faster there.
Maybe it's the Niners. They like watching the Niners.
But, you know, overall, though, this movie, for an early comic movie, I think does a lot of good things in it. And there's a lot of things that are kind of, like, just really, like I said, cheesy earlier that we don't have nowadays. Wesley's good. It's funny because Wesley Snipes has been talking. We tease about this tax evasion. He's not around. But he's been doing interviews lately for the 20th anniversary. And he talks out. He thinks he's the only person that could still play this part.
Probably.
I don't know if I agree with that. You know, Michael B. Jordan could easily play this part.
Yeah,
you know,
he could.
He'd be a badass.
But I would like to see him come back. You know, he ages like a man, but he's a vampire.
Yeah. And maybe do a passing the torch kind of thing. Yeah, you can do that.
That could be.
There's been some talks about Netflix wants to pick up Blade for a possible Marvel Netflix series, but I think it's all been put on hold because of the move from the Disney streaming service that's coming out next year. So I think they're not really announcing anything officially new. So, but I think Blade is a cool enough character. And I think the movie is cool enough that I think I would like to see him return in a modern, you know, with the modern films we have now.
Well, yeah, and then now they could use Morbius. Because before they wanted to use Morbius.
In fact, they filmed a scene that was supposedly going to be Morbius, like an end of the movie cameo.
Yeah.
On a rooftop to kind of lead into a sequel, but they had to cut it because Sony at the time was like, wait a minute, you don't own that. We own it.
Yeah.
We own Spider-Man at the time. And they didn't realize that Sony had bought that with their Marvel character package when they owned Spider-Man back in the late 90s.
Unfortunately.
So it never happened that way. So any final thoughts on Blade from for you, Ashley, or anything?
I wish I would have liked it more and I could be more, like, helpful in this part of the conversation. I don't really have any final thoughts on it. I was really disappointed, unfortunately.
No, that's okay. We were the same way. I was the same way watching it the other night. I was like, man, this is okay in parts, but there's parts of it are just really kind of cringeworthy.
Yeah, they are.
That's a word.
Well, I told my husband, I said, is it okay if I say I didn't really like it, or am I going to be, like, shunned on people who listen to these podcasts?
We don't have to like everything, because, like, last week's episode, we did Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and I didn't really like it, but I'm very picky.
What?
I'm very picky when it comes to comedy. Like, Matt and our other sometime co-host Frank, he gives me a hard time about, like, you just don't like the laugh. I'm like, no, I like the laugh. I just, comedies are like, I watch these movies and they show all the jokes in the trailers and you watch the movie and you're just like, this is stupid. You know, that's just me.
You know, I haven't watched that movie since high school. I wonder if I still find it funny.
Yeah, that's my thing. It's like, when I was watching, I was thinking, man, this was probably funny 20 years ago, but now I watch as an adult and I'm just like, wow, this is really kind of dumb. You know, but there are parts of it that are funny.
Yeah.
So, hey, it's okay not to like everything. You know?
Okay, good.
So, no, we'll forgive you for that.
Yeah.
And
don't hold it against me.
No, we won't. That's it. You final thoughts for you, Madam Blade?
No, I'd like to see some kind of passing of the torch that they do
bring. I think the character's cool enough at least to bring back.
Yeah.
Even the character Deacon Frost. And I'll give credit to Stephen Dorff and Wesley Snipes in this. They did really try hard with the parts they had to play. They can't help that the dialogue was written that way. It's what it was on the page. I mean, we love Star Wars, and Mark Hamill had some really bad dialogue, bad dialogue to work with.
Maybe if David Fincher stayed on set, it would have been better.
Who was it?
David Fincher.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. David Fincher almost directed this. Yeah. That's interesting, because that would have been just before 7, huh? No, right around the same time.
Yeah, after 7, 2 years after.
Yeah. That would have been interesting to see David Fincher direct this film.
It did spawn 2 games, one for PlayStation, one for Game Boy. Yeah. The PlayStation game sucked because the camera angles would get stuck, and it was pretty much repetitive gameplay, jumping through houses, killing vampires over and over again. But the Game Boy version, it was a side-scroller. Kind of an RPG. You got stronger as you got along, and that did pretty good, and it's still worth a little bit.
Hey, and it had 2 sequels, so it did something right to get 2 sequels made to it, and it had an anime series a television series. There was a Blade television series that ran for like 1 season on USA Network or something like that. I don't think I've ever seen that. I didn't know it existed until I did research for this episode, and I was like, wow, they made a Blade television series, and now they're talking about bringing it back. But so we'll see what happens with that. So that's it for Blade. So let's talk. We only have one news brief we got to talk about. Then we're going to talk to Ashley about her project she's got coming on. And that is, we're going to stay on Marvel. They released photos from Captain Marvel this week. Our first look at Brie Larson in the movie. Costume looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to introduce the Skrulls. Ashley, are you kept up with the Marvel stuff?
Yeah, I'm Googling right now. I want to see the pictures.
So, did you see Infinity War?
Of course.
Okay.
We saw it when it came out.
So now the rumors are them showing the Skrulls in the photos have started the rumors now that one of the Avengers is a Skrull, and that's how they're all going to maybe come back to life through Skrulls and time travel and all that. So, you know, it's an interesting theory because we didn't have Skrulls in any of the films. We had mentions of them, but we never had Skrulls officially. So it makes you wonder, is Tony Stark?
I like that outfit.
Yeah, it looks sharp. So,
I like that.
I think General Ross is a Skrull.
General Ross is a Skrull.
Yeah, there might be more than one Skrull. He's trying to control.
What the hell is a Skrull?
Okay, so the Skrulls are the ancient bad guy to the Krill.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the race of Ronin. You remember that race from Guardians of the Galaxy, the blue people.
Yeah. So, okay.
They originally followed the original Captain Marvel to Earth in the comics, and there was a battle. Some of them stayed on Earth, went into hiding. And they can shapeshift, they can clone people, and they walk around with these, you know, illusions that they're someone else. But they're really evil, and they have a string of network, and they're trying to undermine things. So General Ross is a dead ringer for Krull.
So that's what the Skrull is. So, yeah.
Skrull. So why did I say Krull?
So they can take over bodies and manipulate things. So that could explain why General Ross might have manipulated the Civil War and I can't say the word.
And the Sokovia Accords.
The Sokovia Accords, yeah, in Civil War. So that makes sense. So that's our theory. I'm sticking with it, man. One of these guys is a Skrull.
One of them.
I hope they
don't make it like Hawkeye. It's got to be someone juicier than Hawkeye.
Yeah. We'll find out. The movie comes out early March or late February, I believe. Captain Marvel comes out. Well, we won't find out then. We won't find out until Avengers 4 in April, late April. But if Captain Marvel, because it takes place in the 90s.
That's right. So it's like
a prequel. So we're going to get kind of her origin story and where she came from. And she's got like a Nine Inch Nails shirt on in the pictures and stuff. It's like, that's kind of cool.
That's
like me in high school. I would have had a Nine Inch Nails shirt on. so that's kind of neat. All right. It really was a slow news week. That's the only news I have is Captain Marvel photos.
Yeah.
So I bet we're getting a trailer this week.
Burt Reynolds.
Oh, yes. The past.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah, I was sad. I was like, I saw that. And, growing up, Smokey and the Bandit was one of like those movies that I loved. You know, it would always come on Saturday afternoons. You could watch it. That's kind of what I remember him the most from. And then the Cannonball Run films, which were like loose spinoffs of Smokey and the Bandit, kind of similar
concept.
But, you know, 82 years old, really great career. And it was weird because I went to pick up the kids and I told my mom, I said, hey, Mom, did you hear about Burt Reynolds passed away? She goes, yeah, he was a sexy star. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of gross, Mom. She's like, well, he was back in the day. It's like, thanks, Mom. Do y'all have a favorite Burt Reynolds thing y'all remember? For me, it was Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah, Smokey and the Bandit. I mean, we still call cops Smokies on the radio. Like, I had a buddy that had a CBA radio. And he would call ahead to other truckers, hey, are there any Smokies out there? Like, yeah, there's one near I-99 or whatever. and, of course, the Longest Yard.
Yeah.
I love the Longest Yard. I first saw the Cop in Half is what I saw him in the first time when I first was aware of him. I don't know if you'll watch that one.
I think I've heard of it. I probably have seen it. Like, he had so many of those movies that growing up before we had cable and access to streaming all this, that you just remember Burt Reynolds being on TV and something.
Yeah.
We're either watching a movie he did, you know, or a television show, and he was an iconic guy that was always there, part of growing up.
Did you guys see what Ryan Reynolds put on Twitter? They had a picture of Burt Reynolds in his, like, naked shot on the rug with Deadpool under it. Like, you know, Burt did it first and best or something like that.
Yes, I did
see
that.
Was hilarious.
Yeah, that was very funny. You know, it was good that he had a sense of humor. And it never occurred to me that Deadpool shot had been from Burt Reynolds' Cosmo shoot.
Me either.
And I was like, wow, that's actually really funny. And the genius of Ryan Reynolds' comedy paying tribute to a legendary actor.
Yes.
There's no doubt.
Yeah.
So, Burt, you'll be missed, but we have you live on and some great movies you made. And I've been wanting to watch Smokey and the Bandit since, what was it, Thursday that happened? Ever since Thursday, I was like, man, I gotta sit down and watch Smokey and the Bandit now. I know it's on Amazon Prime, so I'll have to sit down and watch it. All right, Ashley, now officially it is all about you. On the on the Rebel Radio podcast, after some lightning storms and thunder and power outages and good old Houston, Texas weather.
Yes.
It wouldn't be Houston without it.
Oh, of course not. You know, you don't like the weather, you wait 5 minutes. That's the old Texas saying, which is probably true. Because, like, yesterday I went to the grocery store and it was pouring down rain, but yet the sun was out. It was strange.
It's very weird.
Yeah. So Ashley, after some slight delay there, so you are an author and you have a new book coming out. And that's why we wanted to bring you on the show, not just talk Blade, which was fun, but we wanted you to be able to talk about what you've got going on and things that you've done. And so let's start with what's brand new. What is your new book called and what's it about? Let's talk to these people and tell them what you do.
Well, on the 18th, I've never done young adult before, and my daughter had asked me to write a book for her. So when I read young adult, it's usually more dystopian. So I wrote a young adult dystopian. It's called The Ones Who Lived, where normally the dystopians pick up into the dystopia where, you know, everything is collapsed and now they've, you know, have some type of rebuild. Mine picks up the day it happens. So it's like the beginning. We have the prequel, which is the day before, and then chapter one is the day it happens. So it's a little different because you don't really see a lot of like how the world's rebuilt, you know, or what happened when all of a sudden, you know, the trash company stops picking up your trash, or, you know, gas stops piping through to your house and things like that. So this one is essentially taking place in Florida, but it happens everywhere. I mean, it's a global disaster, and I can't really tell you why, but all the adults pretty much are gone, and all you're left with is 18 and under. And, yeah, so you got to think, like, what would teenagers nowadays do? Because I'm not quite sure how old you guys are, but when I grew up, we didn't have all the technology, and we played outside. We got dirty. We build things. My kids don't do that, you know? I mean, they're more like into the games, into their phones, into technology. And so what happens when it's all gone?
Yeah, mine.
You know, like, how do you use the library?
Right. Mine,
you know?
Right now, one's on his DS, the other's on the iPad. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But, no, we were definitely always outside. And I was a Boy Scout, so I learned how to make fires, to do things like that.
Yeah, see?
And you wondered how that's a good point. How would this generation react to a situation where they were put in? Like, oh, what do we do now? We don't have a phone. We can't just YouTube it or Google it.
Well, and I had to do a little bit of research, like how long would the gas companies work before there was someone there to man them? You know, it's like, you know, I think it was 2-3 weeks before an explosion would probably happen. How long would the internet last? I mean, all these different things without someone there to man it.
Right.
And so it was kind of different and interesting. It was really hard to write because I don't write towards that audience, and so I had to make it clean, you know, because I wanted it to be able, like, I want her to be able to take it to school, right. You know, and so that's a little hard for me because my other stuff is very adult, so, you know, and then, like, my generation and hers, I mean, you know, there's, you know, a 20-year gap, but a lot changes in 20 years, and so it's like what I remember being 14, 15, 16, would she reference that? Like, I referenced Oregon Trail, and she looks at me, she's like, huh? I was like, I ended up leaving it, you know, because I wrote it and I liked right. it. But she's like, I don't know what that is, you know. And so it was complicated. And it took a little over a year from concept to completion. We actually started planning it in middle of May last year when we were in St. Pete, Florida, for my cousin's high school graduation. So that's when it started. And now it's coming out. I was going to originally have it out on the second Tuesday of September. And then I looked at the calendar and I realized that was 9/11. And so I was like, okay, probably shouldn't have the world ending on 9/11 as a promo. So we did it on the 18th.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably, I can see that. Well, you know, Matt, his birthday is actually 9/11. And
yeah.
So we always like,
oh, wow.
We're always like, oh, yeah, your birthday's coming up, Matt. And he's like, you know, so it's kind of a weird birthday to have on that day.
That is, yeah. Now.
And a post-apocalyptic book might be a little weird, you know. But, I mean, hey, it's a day. You know.
It's a day.
It's a day. Right. Yeah, it's a day.
And
but, I mean, so I kind of tie in President Clinton from the 90s is something he does that is kind of the catalyst to how this destruction happens. And I mean, it's different.
Yeah.
It was fun.
And you were talking about how things have changed in 20 years from we were teenagers. Cause yeah, I graduated high school in 95. So I'm old and to now, and same thing with publishing and authors and stuff. So nowadays, a lot of times, I know your books, I was looking at your website, all your stuff's on Amazon, things like that. And that's changed how you publish nowadays with independent publishing. And we're big into comic books and stuff. And I've met you at Compalooza. And
yeah.
People now, you know, self-publishing and independent publishing makes things a lot easier and more accessible to get your work out there.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I wasn't always indie. I was accepted by two different publishers when I first started out. They were small press, one in Canada and one on the East Coast. And both have since are no longer in business, so I have my rights back. So I do it myself. And in some ways, it is easier because, I mean, I have full control of what I want. I mean, I don't have anyone really telling me what to do. But at the same time, you have to build your support system instead of having it already there for you.
Right.
And so in some ways, it's easier. Some ways, it's harder, you know. And then there are the costs and everything that go to it, which are more when you're doing it on your own.
Right. Yeah. And so you use inspiration for this book from your teenage daughter to help do a young adult, which right now young adult novels are from what I know, I don't read as much as I used to, but it's a big thing right now, you know, which is good.
That's what I'm told.
Right.
There
seems to be a generation that seems to be starting to read again.
That's
and I think
good.
That's because of the popularity we teased earlier in the show about Twilight. But things
yeah.
like that, hey, if it helps get kids into bookstores and read stuff, then why not?
Exactly. And, you know, the dystopian is kind of big now, too, with the Hunger Games and Divergent and all those different things. And I really want it, like, I make a note at the beginning, this isn't that kind of book.
Right.
Because even 1984, all those take place after the catalyst has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've rebuilt of some degree. Whether it's a good rebuild or a bad rebuild, they've rebuilt.
Right.
And so this isn't going to be that kind of book because we don't have all of that foundation. You know, and so these are a couple kids, Amelia and Anthony. They're twins. You know, he's 3 minutes older than her. And their best friend, Sam, and his little cousin. That's how it starts out, this, like, unit of four. And then it grows based on the neighborhood. And I kind of envision their neighborhood like the neighborhood I live in, you know, down the street from you guys. It's a little community with a fence and stuff. Like, what would happen if, you know, these groups of kids, because there's only about 30 kids in my neighborhood, you know, where we live, and that are teenagers to, you know, infants, there's not a lot. So I was kind of thinking about that as I was doing this stuff, like, how would they get to the grocery store? Because not all of them know how to drive. Like, how would they know what to go and stockpile up or all these different things? You know, like, in my house is a little different because my husband's all big into, like, you know, we have, like, our go bags and we are prepared, and the kids, you know, do that. We go primitive camping. So a little different than, like, you know, how my nephews and nieces are going to grow up, because their dads don't do that. Right. You know, it's just a little – but it's taking all those things into consideration. Like, my kids don't know how to hunt. I mean, my son can fish, so okay. But
I wonder, in this future, is it the – I don't want to say redneck, but, like, the farm folk – are they the ones that are, like, destined to survive the dystopia?
I mean, I really think so. I really think so. You know, and so I had some beta readers. I always try to get people that I don't know, that I'm not friends with, and that aren't fans of mine to read my beta reading, because they give me the best feedback, because they don't know my style. They don't have any affiliation with me. They don't feel the need to be honest. And so I try to get some new people for beta reading. Mm-hmm. And this one lady... Go ahead.
Is that available on Goodreads?
The book title should be once it's published. If not, I'll go at it. But yeah, it should be. But so I had this one woman beta read it, and she's like, I really love the story. She's like, but these kids really have their shit together. My kids would not be that well composed. They'd be completely lost.
Yeah. Me, like Mark, I was a Boy Scout as well. I missed my Eagle Scout by not having a Scoutmaster's council meeting. I forget what it's specifically called now. But I don't have a go bag put together, but my dad was a Scoutmaster, and we have all our scouting equipment in our shed. So I have packs, I have a few tents, I've got water purifiers, a couple stoves.
Yeah.
But what your kids know.
So I had to go back. I mean, I was already done. We were already, like, round three of edits. And after this 2-minute conversation from this lady who has no loyalty to me, and she makes these comments, I go and add almost 8,000 words, and included that is this, like, this box of goodies from their dad that prepared in case something ever happened, with instructions on how to keep your shit together, you know, and how to do all these different things, because they don't know how to do that. So it's interesting, and it's just how to think about it in a different way.
No, that sounds cool. And I know you sent me a copy, and I have to sit down and look at it still. I'll be honest, just haven't had a chance. But I like that idea that I love science fiction or dystopias, but that is absolute, that doesn't over-explain the world, that this is what happens, and it allows the mystery to unfold without putting too much in the front of you, because I think it makes for a more exciting story and more appealing than to give everything to you up front.
Yeah, you actually don't find out what happens till the epilogue, and then you find out why it all happened.
Is this something that could be a continuance, kind of like your Blood series?
Yes. Yeah. So it's going to be another book. I have to decide if I want book two, because I love bad guys. So I have to decide if I want book two to be a bad guy book, to where it's just focused on people that cause this destruction, or if I want this community to continue to evolve into a traditional 3-book arc of, you know, you have your problem, you come up with your game plans, and you find the solution. I got to decide what I want to do, but it'll definitely be at least 2 books, if not 3, once I figure I don't plan. So I kind of have to do a little bit of planning to decide where I want to go, but I'm not there yet, because I also like feedback. So people will read it, and they'll leave comments, they'll leave reviews, they'll contact me, they'll tell me different things, like, oh, I wanted to hear more of this or hear more of that, and I'll take that and I'll put them in the next books. Right. So I kind of got to wait a little and see
what people say. And so Matt, you mentioned the Blood series. That was the one that I saw that I knew she really liked vampires.
I love the Blood series. That was my baby.
So reading or doing vampire book, like, what were some vampire stories? I know we did Blade on the episode, but what were some vampire stories that may have inspired that you grew up really liking and or reading?
I'm going to be honest. So that all was inspired by my aunt and I doing genealogy on our family tree from Lebanon. I was laid off of work, and we were doing this genealogy, you know, work, and I really wanted to read a vampire book that took place in Lebanon or in the Middle East, because we're doing all this look, and I couldn't find any, so I wrote one.
Oh, okay.
And that's how my writing started.
Oh, neat.
So, yeah.
So, you look like you're going to say something, Matt.
Yeah, a vampire series that my wife really liked is Vampire Diaries. So what do you think about Stefan and Damon Salvatore?
Well, that's Rochelle Mead, right?
That's for what?
That's Rochelle Mead, the author of Vampire Diaries.
Yeah.
So I think there's like 20 books in there. I have not made the commitment to read those yet. I read all her other series, but I've not made the 20 book commitment for Vampire Diaries.
I read Ready Player One last year, and it took me all year so I could finish before the movie came.
I loved that book. I read it after the movie, but I loved that book.
That's how long it takes for me to read a book. It's like about a year. I'll read it when picking up the kids in the car, and I'll read a little bit every day. And so it takes me a while.
I think, Mark, I think you've probably heard my spiel, but with the Blood series, it's really different because it's not set up like we were talking about, like the Twilight. It's not set up like that. So in my world, Nicole is a princess, and her brother Zane is king, and they have to learn to overcome their struggles to save their race from their uncle and cousins. Because, like I had said, I liked Blade because the bad guys, or the vampires, are really bad guys. Mm-hmm. So in my world, the definition of good versus evil is, are you for King Zane or are you against King Zane? Because at the end of the day, the vampires still keep humans in the basement as shackled as cattle.
Right.
Because they're not romanticized creatures. You know, and so it's a different kind of vampire. For sure, they have... genetic, like how I liked how you could be birthed, you know, born versus the turn. In mine, it is all genetic, and they have different elemental powers that can only be passed down with recessive dominant genes. You can't mix and match and randomly get stuff. And there's true bloodlines of royalty because they have a specific trait that you only get from being in that bloodline and all this different stuff.
Yeah. That sounds cool. So you're willing to challenge the ideas of what traditional vampires are too.
Okay.
Because let's be honest, the idea of vampires were written by authors, you know, 100 years ago who said these had to be the rules. You know, I mean, that's just, there's no reason it can't be changed.
Exactly. And in my world, I take actual human events and I twist it into this reality because the vampires have been around long before us and they've used us in their pawns because we generally accept God created us. I mean, generally, I've been at Comic Palooza where someone like yelled at me, like, I don't believe God created us. I'm like, okay. So we generally all accept God created humans. In my world, the Al'Ghul actually created humans in their image and likeness for food. And so they have been like the one God, and they made us all believe they were, you know, in control as one God and using us throughout time.
Yeah, I am. And I also noticed I cheated a little bit and listened to you and our friends Miguel and the Critical Thinking guys. And I know you like...
That was a fun podcast.
And you listened to... I know you use a lot of inspire your writing. Like you said, you already said you use a lot of real-world events. You use a lot of your friends and your experiences.
I do.
And I heard on the show that all your children are adopted, which immediately my ears peaked up on that because my brother and sister are both adopted. So I was
awesome.
That's really cool, you know, and that you use those experiences you have from adopted children and naming them and putting them in your books and the ideas of that. And I thought that was really neat.
Well, actually, this book, the names, I left Aaron and Sierra. I didn't use their names as characters. I used the names of what we were going to name the children that we lost. And so we had a daughter that we lost, so we knew her gender. So I didn't use Elizabeth's name. But after we had her, we came up with all these other names. We had like Anthony, we had Dean and Sam, and we had Amelia. So far, and my husband's a huge Winchester Boys fan. So yes, I've used Sam, I've used Anthony, I've used Amelia. I have not used Dean yet because I haven't decided if Dean's going to be good or bad. Dean will be in book two, whether it's good or bad, I don't know, because I love bad guys. Because in my Blood series, a bad guy gets a happy ending. So I don't know yet, but yeah, and you got to be careful because when I'm looking for names, I'll scroll through Facebook and you may end up in a book. You never know.
Yeah, hey, it's possible.
And yeah, I mean, I try to avoid names of like immediate family members, so there's no like confusion.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely take from what I know.
Yeah, I've never done anything as master of the book. I've done some creative writing. I've done the same thing where I've used friends' names, but I might change the last names in them and things like that. But I think the best ideas come from real world experiences and people that are around you and inspire you every day. You know, I mean, we podcast because we have a lot of local friends that help, like Miguel and those guys and some other friends of ours that we meet at Compalooza. We all play off each other's ideas and try to make our shows better, and we also support each other, and it makes for a better experience.
Well, I think the whole community of artists in general needs to be more like that. I mean, I know author friends and I, we have our community that we do that too, but it expands more than just the author community or the pop. I mean, it's a more mixing of people who are independently putting something out there to, you know, help the world in some type of entertaining way, because you get away from your life when you're in this hour-long podcast or when you're in a book or when you're listening to music, you know, and that makes people happy and helps the world, you know, progress on.
Exactly, because if you don't have escapism to get away from some things sometimes, and you will go nuts like Matt does.
Yeah.
I have three kids, Matt has three kids, and sometimes it's like you're pulling your hair out.
Speaking about nuts, I read that your dogs think that they are human. Do they still think they're human?
Did you read my blog?
A little bit.
Oh my gosh, yes, I love my babies. Toto, he's my favorite. He thinks he's a little human for sure. Oh my gosh, do they? My cat thinks he's a dog.
Yeah, your cat thinks he's a dog, that's right.
Yeah, but my dogs, yeah, they do think they're little humans. My husband says this because I make them that way. I disagree. I think they came to me that way. But yeah, they think they're humans. I love my blog. My blog makes me so happy. That's been the best part, I think, of all of it. I've really enjoyed that outlet.
No, it's definitely good. I remember LiveJournal. Remember LiveJournal?
Oh, shoot.
That is old school.
Yeah. I mean, actually, you know, my blog, I thought my blog was a nice, innocent place where I could be safe. And my blog is actually what helped launch, like, my first mass sales of books. Because foolishly, I thought I could put my opinion on my blog and be okay with it. But we went and got a sneak peek to Superman, and like the Superman 1 with what's his name? Anyways, it doesn't matter. I did not like it. I gave it a 3.5 star. I had like the good, the bad, and the stuff I hated. I just did not like it. I felt like it, you know, stole a bunch of special effect type stuff from different things. I felt it tried to be a little too much like Independence Day with the blue light. I gave my opinion. And then my high school boyfriend calls me. He's like, Ashley, you're being trashed on all these comic websites. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? And he's like, go to this website. I mean, no joke, there was 30,000 comments about this idiot Ashley Niemer in Houston. And all these different things. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then like 4 weeks later, I heard an interview with Kevin Smith, and half the shit he said was the exact same thing I said. But because Kevin Smith said it, it's acceptable. Ashley Niemer said it, it's not. But that was my big catalyst. Like my first, I mean, I think I had like 80,000 downloads off of that one summer. Because of that Superman.
There's no bad publicity, even if you hate a movie.
Oh my! I mean, I know it's not even a 3.5 star. It's not even like I said, you know, it's a 1 star. I mean, right. It's like B plus, C movie. I still think it sucks. Like I mean, it's now like my epitome of this is why I hate DC movies. I mean, it sucks. And man, those people trash the hell out of me. I can't wait for that next event to happen. I want another one of those.
The internet. <is brutal. laughs>
I was okay with it. It really served me good.
Hey, that's what works. Matt, did you look like you were?
Oh no, I was wondering. You said you got a like 80 downloads. Was that from Blood 80, Purple 000. Or?
Oh yeah, no, like it was like 80,000 down 80, that summer 000, off Blood sorry. Purple. Yeah, it was huge. Like the Blood series is by far my bestseller. I think it's because it has something to offer for everyone. Because it's not a paranormal romance. It's a more science fiction paranormal because the main characters are siblings and I don't write that kind of romance. So the romances are subcategories and you're really dealing more with relationships. And, you know, if you listen to Miguel's, I talked about it before. I write a lot of brother-sister stuff because I write what I know because I grew up with my brother. My parents were divorced, so it was always me and him wherever we went. And so that's what I write. In most things, it's brother and sister relationships, and people can relate to it easy because whether or not they have a brother or sister, there's someone who's like that in their life to them, usually.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have a brother and a sister. I are both adopted, and my brother's American, my sister's Korean, and So, you know, and I'm very close with both of them. And even Matt, we do the show together.
Yeah.
Matt's like a brother to me, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why we podcast, too. We get to hang out with our best friends and do a show, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and so I like those types of relationships. And so the Blood series is really good in that sense because it has something for everything. It has the sex and the romance for, you know, the people who like that. But it also has a lot of blood and guts and things you got to overcome and characters that are raw and real that don't start out. I hate when characters immediately start out perfect. Like, that's my biggest annoyance in fiction. Like the alpha male automatically has to be a perfect guy. There is no real thing. Like, that is not real. Your expectations are ridiculous. They got to at least work up to be worthy of worship. And they're not born that way.
That's for Tom Cruise. So, but that's just a running joke on our show.
Yes, it is.
It'd be Will Smith for me. He's perfect.
But
yeah, no, I mean, I really like, you know, those different types of the different parts of it. That's why I like being a little different in my writing. And people either love it or they hate it. And that's cool. Whatever you like.
Yeah, as long as you're doing what you love.
Do you have any favorite authors that you read that have helped inspire you?
Yeah. Tammy Hoag. She is my favorite, hands down, author. She is the coolest lady in the world. I met her a couple years ago. I think I died that night and went to heaven. She's awesome. I love Catherine Coulter, too. They do both have romance and mystery and suspense. And that's what I cut my teeth on Tammy Hoag. She was my first adult novel back in high school. And so those are the ones I always buy.
Yeah, it's always fun to meet your heroes. It's funny you mentioning how everyone said it was okay. Kevin Smith said it. And I got to meet him briefly about 2 years ago here in Houston. It was very quick, like 3 minutes. It was a signing. But it was like a really cool 3 minutes. I was like, to meet one of my.
That's
heroes.
Awesome.
Yeah. So it's
were like, you at the Were you at the Comic Palooza where Jay Muse was at?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I got to meet him too. And I actually sat in. We were just starting the podcast at that time. I was still learning things, so I sat in with a podcast friend of mine while he interviewed Jay, and I got to talk to him. And he actually cut a promo for the show on my phone. It was like our first promo we ever got was from Jason Muse. So that was pretty.
That's
cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. He was.
Yeah. He's awesome.
Yeah, he was real laid back and real down to earth. It's like he was goofy and he didn't care who talked to him. He talked to anybody.
Well, I grew a pair of balls that weekend for some crazy reason. When I went to get his autograph, I was like, hey, I'm an author. He's like, oh, that's cool. I was like, could I interview you for my blog? He's like, yeah, sure. You want to meet at 10 o'clock tomorrow at the Hilton across the street?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, sure, I'm there. And then I realized that I had a panel at that time and I wasn't going to be able to make it. So I had to send my husband in my place. I was so devastated. But my husband did a great interview. I have that on my YouTube page. I was so pissed. I was so upset. It's like I finally got someone to say yes and I couldn't do it.
I'm gonna have to go find the interview and watch it because he was a cool, fun guy. And I always keep hoping he comes back to Houston, too.
He was awesome. And, like, on that Friday, he was giving everything away for free the first day. I mean, he was awesome.
Yeah, he literally, because I have a little inside information on Compalooza, he literally called up the Compalooza people and said, hey, I want to come down there with Mike and Ming. And he goes, just put me up in a hotel, pay for my flight. That's all he wanted. He didn't even want a fee or nothing like that. So he basically did the show for free.
Wow.
Yeah, he just.
That's a cool guy.
Yeah. And.
That's a cool guy. This year, I had so much fun at Comic Palooza. This year, I literally died this year. Orlando Jones kissed me.
Oh. Yeah, I was cool. I went and talked to George Lowe, the voice of Space Ghost, and that was a cool moment growing up watching Space Ghost. And he was really.
Oh, that's awesome.
He was really cool. He wouldn't do an interview for the podcast. He was being kind of stingy about that, but he was willing to talk for a few minutes and just chat casually. He was just like, no, I don't want you to record me. I was like, okay. So, you know, but hey, sometimes they're like that, you know.
Yeah, I hit Data, Jordy, and then Orlando Jones, and I was done. I was an hour. I was spent. It was the best hour of definitely the last 2 years.
We ended up taking a photo with Kristen Ritter.
Oh, yeah, we did do that.
Oh, that's cool.
But yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, I've been to like 7 or 8 straight Compaloozas now. It's always fun. And that's how I met you. We were sitting next to Martin Nassau a few years ago. And that's why Miguel sent me a message saying, hey, do you want to put Ashley on the show? I was like, oh, yeah, I know her. She may not remember me, but I know her, who she is.
And, no, I remember. Yeah, he and I, we ran into each other a couple times since outside of Comic Palooza. We've run into each other. My son has his Ninja Turtles drawing in a frame in his room. So
are you doing Fandemic here in Houston next week?
No, I'm not. I mean, you know, the cost-benefit analysis of that just didn't work out this year for it. But, I mean, I had such a shitty spot at Comic Palooza this year. Behind the T-Mobile van. Right. It was awful. Well, I was so disappointed.
Noise coming from it.
Yeah.
Well, and then everybody stops at the van, and they didn't go back any further.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it makes it hard to have foot traffic. So I was really disappointed, but I love Comic Palooza. Yeah. I've been going since 2010.
Yeah, that's about, I think, about when I started. Yeah, it's a good, fun con, and good that our city has that, and hopefully it keeps going and gets a little bit bigger over the
Well, it used to be much easier to, like, interact with the fans and stuff when it first started. I mean, I kind of miss those days where you could take pictures in the line and not, you know, get kicked out.
Yeah, it's a little more strict now, I would say. Even as me, being media press and stuff, we have a lot less access than what we used to have, but I guess, you know, all these things change, unfortunately.
So. Yeah, I've never seen the metal detector before, like in front of Tom Holland. That was crazy.
Yeah, it was nuts.
Metal detector?
Yeah, they had metal detector.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I mean, the first day of Friday getting in there was pretty rough for everybody. Then they relaxed a little bit on Saturday and Sunday, but.
That was all because of that guy kept calling himself the Punisher. And he came in with real guns, dressed as the Punisher, and he was going to kill Jason David Frank.
Oh, yeah, that was in Phoenix.
He's a cool dude, though. He's awesome.
JDF. My wife loves him.
We were at, I think, one of the Space City cons when we met him.
Oh, yeah, he always does San Antonio. That's where his dojo is.
Yeah.
Space City was here in Houston.
That's it's over in Humboldt. It was over in Humboldt.
Oh, yeah.
His dojo.
Yeah.
I think I'm only missing one Power Ranger. And I think I'm just... No, I'm missing the Yellow Ranger, too. I'm just missing the girls in the original cast.
Have to get them at Comic Palooza.
Well, I think Trini died.
One of them did. Yeah.
Trini died. You can get Aisha, though. Aisha was there 2 years ago.
Yeah, I didn't, though.
No.
I mean, I got Zed, and I wanted the... But, so I think I'm just missing Kimberly. Of what I could get.
Matt's a Power Ranger guy.
Yeah,
that's kind of before my time, or after my time, I guess. My kids like it.
Well, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers is the kind of guy I'm at. The real Power Rangers.
The real Power Rangers.
Yes.
So, Ashley.
That's the best kind, the Mighty Morphin.
Yeah. So, your book comes out the 18th. What day are we on the 9th? So, 9 days away to release, huh?
Yeah, 9 days away, next Tuesday. I'm so excited.
So people can get it on your website? And
Yes, they can get it on my website, Amazon, Barnes & Nobles. Anywhere ebooks are sold, my books are out. But like, you can order it at Barnes & Nobles or Amazon for the print or through me. Yeah.
And where is your website for people that know?
I'm at ashleynemer.com. NEMER.
Okay.
So,
before we do close, we know you got to run too, and everything. We had this delay with this crazy storm.
That's. I'm just glad we didn't have to redo the whole thing.
Oh yeah, I know. I saw that because I was like, me and Matt were talking while the power went out. I was like, well, how are we going to do this? But luckily it worked out. And I give you a chance for any final things you want to tell people that are listening about your books and anything else that they want to know about you.
Well, I mean, I'm a pretty open book. I'm on social media everywhere. I'm just really appreciative that you guys let me come on, even though it's been a few years since we met.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm really excited, and I'm hopeful that this maybe be a new start, and maybe this can move from a hobby to a real job. Right. I love my books. They definitely are different, and if you're looking for something that's different and an easy read, then I'm your girl.
There you go. Awesome. So go to ashleynemer.com and check out her books, And we're almost done with the show. Do you want to stay on with us as we close out the show for a minute, or?
It's whatever you guys want.
You can.
I'm here. You know, just grateful I'm here. So whatever you want.
This is where the end of the show here. We preview our next movie, so we can preview the movie with us. Then we'll close it out. And the next show, we're gonna stay kind of in sci-fi genre. We're going to talk Predator 2.
Los Angeles, 1997. It's the hottest summer on record. Pollution is choking the city. The gangs control the streets.
It has not been a nice day!
As bad as things are, they're about to get worse. Much worse.
Whoever killed him is gonna pay. I'm gonna finish it.
It has almost no weight.
But it cuts like steel.
Incredible.
Whoever did this took out four men armed with machine guns by hand.
You don't know what you're dealing with. Otherworld life forms, drawn by heat and conflict. He's on safari. Lions. Tigers. The bears. Oh my.
Danny Glover. Gary Busey. Ruben Blades. Maria Conchita Alonso. Bill Paxton. Predator 2. He's in town with a few days to kill this Thanksgiving.
Yes. Not one, but the new Predator movie's coming out in theaters. We were like, well, we just did an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie a few weeks ago, so we're like, let's not do another Arnold. So we're going to do Predator 2, which is not as well received, but I would say it's well liked.
It does have one of the characters from the Arnold movie we did.
Yeah.
The girl, but she's the girl in Predator 2.
Yeah. And this is the one that takes place in the city, and Danny Glover's in it, and Gary Busey's character is in it. And,
yeah, Gary Busey.
I really like this one. It's just kind of a fun sci-fi flick. Maybe not the best movie you've ever watched, but it's just a fun little movie.
Yeah, it's fun.
So that's going to be the movie we're doing next week on the show. And so we hope people check it out. And we hope people enjoy listening to us talk today about Blade and about having Ashley Niemer on the show. Make sure you go to rebelradiopodcast.com. That's where you can find all our episodes. And follow us on Twitter at Rebel Radio Pod. And Ashley, what is your Twitter?
Ashley Niemer.
Okay, so she keeps it simple.
Yes.
I do. Hey, I'm very simple.
Yeah.
Yeah. But thank you for coming on the show so much. We're glad you were able to.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
And
if you're ever bored and need someone to come back, please let me know.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely.
And Matt was saying, he was talking to Skype, I didn't realize you live that close. So I never know in this city. This city's crazy.
Yeah. So, no, we're right down the road.
Yeah, because I literally, my son takes karate not far from there. But thank you for coming. And,
thank you.
And we enjoyed it. And hopefully drive safe in your in the rainy day here. So as I know, you got to go do some Girl Scout things, Matt was saying.
Yeah. So. Well, hopefully I'll see you next year at Comicpalooza, too.
Oh, yeah. We'll be there for sure.
Yes.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
This is Mark.
This is Matt.
That's all we got. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. Just go there.
Just go there and do it.
This is Ming Chen from AMC's Comic Book Man. I love Houston. I love podcasting. But what I really love is the Rebel Radio Podcast.